Before we get started with this episode, I want to share something that I think could be a game changer for your classroom. Now, as a former special education teacher, one of the things I struggled with the most was creating activities, resources, and curriculum for my classroom. I did not realize that that was part of my job. I have spent the last 10 years developing the Autism Helper curriculum based on what was missing from my former classroom. And now we finally have a way for school districts to purchase this curriculum directly for their teachers. The Autism Helper Curriculum Access is an annual subscription that provides access to all levels and subjects of our curriculum. This curriculum is rooted in evidence-based practices, it's aligned to the standards, and we just completed our pilot case study showing the overall effectiveness. To learn more about how your district can get curriculum access, head over to theautismhelper.com and click Curriculum Access. Hi, I'm Sasha Long, special ed teacher and board certified behavior analyst. Welcome to the Autism Helper podcast. I'm here to explore different strategies to improve the lives of individuals with autism. Welcome back to the Autism Helper podcast. Today I'm interviewing Jen and Megan about reverse inclusion. Now I love reverse inclusion. I think this is one of the most meaningful things I did in my years of teaching. I love talking about it and sometimes it gets a little heat. So I was really excited for this interview with Jen and Megan. Jen is a BCBA and Megan is a special education teacher, and they are both the voices behind the Moms Managing Behavior LLC, where they provide training and consultation and support. They both work in a public school. So all of this advice is real world based, things that actually happen in that busy public school setting. They talk about what reverse inclusion is, why you might want to use it. And really importantly, I think they talk about some of the challenges with more traditional inclusion opportunities and why reverse inclusion is sometimes a better fit for some students. So let's go ahead and dive into reverse inclusion. Hi, Jen and Megan. Thanks so much for being here.
We're so happy to be here with you.
Hi, thanks for having us.
I'm excited to talk about one of my favorite topics, and that is inclusion. I actually was talking to Jen and Megan before, and I had a different idea for the episode, and they had a better idea. So I'm excited for the pivot and to talk about inclusion and social skills. And there's so much room to grow. Maybe that's putting it really nicely in a lot of our schools right now.
Definitely.
Absolutely. We agree.
So kind of just starting from a big overview here, what are some actionable things that teachers and support staff can do to create more inclusive environments in their schools? I know I think sometimes we feel kind of like, well, this is the setting we're in, but I think there are some steps we can take to help improve that, the culture and environment.
Definitely. And something that we found that works really well is working from the top down. So, you know, if you're in an ABA program and especially in a public school, you're kind of like a little like niche in the school. And not everyone necessarily knows what you're doing or how to access the students in the classroom. So by working with the administration first, we find that it's really helpful to share what we're doing, have them come observe our classroom, and then go from there. So once we have the buy-in from the administration, we can work with the teachers and the staff on how to include our students more into activities, which then obviously leads to more opportunities for socialization. So one of the things that we've done is provide trainings for the teachers and staff. So to not only educate them on autism and ABA, but what things you might see in the classroom, how our students communicate, and ways that our students could be successful in their classroom. And we found that mostly everyone we work with is very receptive to that and always wants to learn and wants to include our students, but maybe didn't know how. So it's been really successful for us, and our students have gained so many opportunities through working, you know, with everyone in the school.
What kind of advice do you have for a teacher that's like, oh my gosh, I'm so nervous to do a training? Like, I can just hear like someone listening being like, okay, that's a great idea, but like, how do I do that? Like, I feel nervous about that. Like, can it be like a simple kind of thing?
Yeah, absolutely. So we honestly started our trainings with just very specific like, what is autism? You know, yeah. Some teachers don't even know what it is, or, you know, the characteristics of autism, and just really basic strategies of how the students can be included in your classroom. And, you know, we just made slides, right? So it's something easy. We could just go through it with the staff. Again, it was also kind of great just to build rapport with them. So, you know, the simpler the training, honestly, the better. And we just also used it as an opportunity for them to ask questions or just kind of open the door and open the line for communication. So we try to do the trainings, you know, with the gen ed staff or with the related arts teachers in the beginning of the school year, just so that they know, you know, we want to work collaboratively with them. And another training that everyone in the school here loves is we have our speech therapist help us out with this one, but we have a lot of students who use AAC devices. And I think that's definitely, you know, foreign to gen ed teachers, and they don't really know how to include students and the peers and kind of explain AAC devices, because you can imagine, you know, a lot of students in the school ask about them. What are they? You know, how they get an iPad, things like that. So we actually have our speech therapists do trainings with the teachers, but also with the students, and explaining to them what an AAC device is, why students use it, how they use it. She'll even bring in extra, you know, AAC devices for the kids to try. And I think it's a really great training that our school does, because the students, first of all, build empathy, because they realize that it's so difficult to use, you know, so we'll have them practice asking each other questions and then try to find the answer on the AAC device. It also teaches the students things like wait time, right? So if you ask a friend who has a device a question, give them that wait time. It's not that they don't want to answer, but that it just may take longer for them to respond. And that's definitely one of our favorite trainings we do, and kind of get the speech therapist, you know, on board with us. And I think the school really appreciates it and values it. And I think it's really important, and it makes the students more inclusive, right? Because they understand how the students are communicating. And so that is one of like our favorite trainings to do. And it's also, if you're new to doing this and you're kind of nervous, it kind of gives you a counterpart, right? So Jen and myself always do trainings together, or try to get someone else, you know, to join us in on the trainings, just to feel a little bit, you know, more confident.
I love that example with like practicing with the AAC device, because when students get that hands-on experience, they then, yeah, can empathize a little bit better because they've used it before and understand, you know, how much effort it can take to use it and the wait time piece. That's a great example. Thinking about what you said earlier on opening the door for questions, I also think was a really good point on, even if it was, let's say, a 15-minute training, like something, you know, your principal's like, I only got 15 minutes for you. It allows the door to be opened for questions, which I think sometimes is like half the problem, is teachers feel nervous to ask questions, or I don't know who to go to. But you're basically just kind of like putting it out there like, hey, like, it's okay if you don't know what's happening in my class or in these classrooms, but come talk to me about it. And that can be like an important first step, I think.
Yeah, I agree. And I also think that going at the broad trainings too, we find can be really helpful. So it's not singling one teacher and one student out in terms of their needs. So doing the broad trainings to help towards that generalization of skills. So I think sometimes when we're going in, and we do this sometimes where a student, we're working with the teacher with a specific student. But oftentimes if we're just going and spreading the information and sharing general strategies that you can use, not only are they helpful for our students, but we find that teachers may find them helpful for other students in the class too. So it's just about like best practice and, you know, antecedent strategies that might benefit everyone in the classroom, not just the students that we're looking to integrate.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I love when that happens too. You're like, see, this isn't just like special ed voodoo. This is for everyone.
Exactly.
So thinking about in a typical public school, there's a lot of different types of inclusion that can happen. Do you want to give a rundown of different types of inclusion that can happen with students with a disability with an IEP?
Yeah, absolutely. So we can give an example, you know, at least in our district. So when we first looked at inclusion, one of the first areas, I feel like a lot of schools, even just talking to other people, that they look at is in the specials, right? Related arts. So art and library and gym and music, you know, so that they can spend some time with their gen ed peers in there. And we found sometimes that to be successful. We originally would choose like areas that they really like, right? So this student really loves art. So let's have them integrate into art. We sometimes found it actually backfired because the student loved art, but they loved to do what they wanted to do, right? So now the art teacher is saying, we're going to draw this, and the student wants to do what they want to do. And sometimes it would, you know, cause some more challenging behaviors. So, you know, then we kind of looked, okay, you know, related arts are great, but also they get harder as the students get older, right? So music in kindergarten and first grade was a great place to look to include our students. But by third or fourth grade, the students are learning about composers and how to read sheet music and things that might be a little bit, you know, challenging for our students, which then, you know, may increase those challenging behaviors. So we tried to look at other areas, you know, of the day. Lunch and recess is obviously another area where people look to include for socialization purposes. We do find that sometimes lunch is challenging, right? If you've been in a public school lunchroom, they're very quick, they're very loud, there's a lot of barriers in our way, and you have like 10 minutes to eat, so it's not like you actually have that much time to socialize. So, you know, that is an area that we'll look at, and recess as well. Obviously that's, you know, an important one, but sometimes recess doesn't have any structure, right? So it's just like, go and run with your friends. And that might be hard for our learners. So, you know, originally these were all places we looked to include, but we did find that, you know, there were still some barriers, for our learners. And that's kind of where we came up with this idea of reverse inclusion. So we started a peer buddy program at our school where we would have the students from their gen ed class come into our classroom to work on things, you know, work on projects and, you know, maybe science projects or art projects or just to play games and work on social skills. And we found this to be super, super successful. At first, we were actually a little nervous, like maybe we wouldn't have students sign up. So we had to get parental permission for them to, you know, join the Peer Buddy program. And what we've actually found every year is that we have so many students sign up that we actually have to like rotate through students, which was really exciting for us that, you know, so many kids really wanted to be part of this program. And some of the things that make it successful is one being that it's on our home turf, right? So the students are in their classrooms, so they feel comfortable. They have their safe spaces. They have their, you know, calm down areas, or they have their reinforcers. Also, it eliminates transition, right? So we know transitioning can be difficult for our students, and having the other students come to our classroom eliminates that. We also have a really dense ratio, right? So every student has a para here, and, you know, it's different than just one para going into a gen ed classroom, you know, trying to facilitate, you know, socialization. So we really have found the reverse inclusion piece to be super successful in our school. And it's a great way. And we do train the peers too on, you know, again, things we had mentioned before, wait time or understanding, you know, maybe you need to repeat a question again or get a student's attention before you ask a question. And so it's a little bit more of a controlled environment, and we're able to kind of, you know, manipulate the situation. We're able to work on skill acquisition programs and generalization, which is always awesome. Having the peers do it in just a more natural way. An example I always give is like personal questions, right? So the teacher keeps asking the student, what's your name? It's like, well, I know your name, right? You've been my student for 3 years. But it's so nice to actually have a peer do it. And we can, again, you know, contrive those situations with the peers in the classroom, but in a more natural way. And that was so successful that we kind of looked to another area of inclusion, which is our after-school program. So the after-school program is run by our parent-teacher organization. And in the past, we've always had parents want their students on the spectrum to join. And, you know, it's challenging because it's after school, so the support isn't always there. And so we kind of, Jen and I, went to the PTO and said, hey, like, we have this idea. How about doing some sort of inclusive group so that our students are also able to participate, but with having the support that they need? And our PTO was all for it, which was great. And it's been really successful. We've been doing all sorts of different topics topics. We've done a social skills group. We've done a sports group. We've done a crafts group. Currently, we're doing a bead lab where we make jewelry.
I love that.
That's all the craze right now. And yeah, it's been really successful. Again, it's on our home turf. So our students are familiar. They have their, you know, safe space. And we have the other learners come into our classroom. And that has also been you know, really great. The parents are so thankful for them to be able to be included with the right supports, right? Because although they could be included in some of the other programs, it may not be as successful. And, you know, we don't want them to have a bad experience in it. So those are kind of some of the areas that we've kind of, you know, looked at. Of course, there's always, you know, academic inclusion, you know, if a student is available for that. But we, you know, are always trying to think outside the box in ways in which we could, you know, get the students to be included in the public school.
To echo what Megan's saying as well, when we're looking at social skills, we are always looking, again, like Megan said, for additional opportunities for our students to be included. But we find that going from the self-contained classroom immediately into the general education classroom is a big jump. And oftentimes our social skills programming in the self-contained classroom is with peers where we are prompting them, or staff who are know what the response is that we should be given. And so that unpredictability of social interactions, especially with peers and neurotypical peers, is a lot for our students. So having the reverse inclusion and the ASC gives a little bit more control for us, where there are some instances where it might be a little bit unpredictable, but not so unpredictable that it leads to, you know, an unsuccessful interaction. So that's kind of the biggest success I've seen from it, is that it prepares them for those situations where everyone might not respond the way you're used to. And how do you navigate that?
And it's really scaffolding towards then bigger inclusion opportunities. Megan, I like how you kind of led with like, okay, traditionally we have a lot of inclusion for, you know, specials and gym and recess, but like, let's be real. Those are really hard times for inclusion. Like, I literally tell my daughter, like, don't eat during lunch or don't talk during lunch because you don't eat your lunch. Like, you know, I'm like, don't talk to your friends, just eat your food. Like, you know, so those are hard times to have meaningful opportunities, as you said, Jen, for like the unpredictability, the social skills. And if those aren't working, we have to think outside the box on, well, okay, then what's something different? And what I do love about reverse inclusion that you both just said is, you know, we're changing less things. Like, we're keeping some of the familiarity, the structure, the support the same, which gives a lot of our kids the opportunities to then be successful with this hard skill of socializing with a peer.
And the one thing, too, that we've noticed is we're always so focused on what our students are doing, how they're responding, how they're communicating, how they're reacting to certain situations. And, you know, the skills we teach are only as good as the environment they go into. So by having the students come into our classroom, we're working on acceptance and inclusivity and empathy. And those are all characteristics of a, you know, a good friend that down the road we'd want them to be for our student in a different environment, especially if we weren't there.
Yeah, for sure. So I did reverse inclusion a lot when I was in the classroom, and I was kind of telling you guys before we clicked record, I did like an Instagram video or TikTok a while ago about this, and there were a lot of heated comments not on board. And I got to say, I was like very surprised. You never know what's going to like annoy people, because to me, like everything you guys are saying, I'm like, yes, it's like I saw the amazing things on both sides. I saw the list of kids wanting to come and the benefits for both groups. But comments that people made were first off like, well, you should just do full inclusion and that's it. I'm like, well, you've probably never been in my classroom. And second of all, like, you know, thinking maybe too far in the details of like, well, a gen ed student shouldn't be in a special ed teacher's class. They don't have an IEP and they don't have this. And I was like, everyone needs to just simmer down. We're not providing instructional minutes here.
And I think, too, like, that's the whole topic of acceptance, right? We've moved from autism awareness to acceptance, right? So, again, I think that to me just speaks on a community that might need more information. They might need to have a presentation about autism. Let's talk about the students in our program. And not to single, you know, a group of students out, but, you know, it's not about everyone deserves the same opportunities. They may look different and there may be different supports for them to get there. But ultimately, I think that it just is education overall about the community and students who learn differently.
Oh, I wish I would have had that response ready. Like, it sounds like the community needs a little bit more training.
We will follow your Instagram and make sure that if people comment. The other thing I was going to say when people talk about that they should be in full inclusion, obviously that's always an ultimate goal of ours, yes. right? I think it's the ultimate goal of most teachers. But I think after working in a school for many, many years, it's not that easy. And what happens in a public school is a student goes, there are these barriers in place. They don't have the skills they need. They engage in a challenging behavior, and they're removed from the environment. And that's not successful for anyone, right? And it's stigmatizing for the student. It's frustrating for the teacher. And I feel like there was this big push, like everyone should be included, which we are all for. But if you aren't teaching the skills needed, then it's going to just be a disaster for everyone. And then you don't get the buy-in from the teachers, and you don't get the buy-in from the administration. And so we really have found, you know, we want them to be successful for many reasons, because it makes the school run smoother, and they are more confident in that situation, and they feel comfortable, and it's not stigmatizing, and they're not engaging these challenging behaviors in front of all of their peers, right? So I think it's important to do these steps to teach them the skills needed. We've even done something, we talk about recess a lot, right? So everyone says, wow, recess is a great place to socialize. And again, anyone who works in an autism program, I'm sure can tell you, or any public school can tell you, recess is the most challenging time of day for students' behaviors, right? There's no structure. There's a lot of kids. There's not that much staff. And, you know, there are support to help. And oftentimes kids will engage in behaviors and they're removed from recess, right? So it's like, well, this kid hit someone. Now they can't go to recess anymore. Now they need to go somewhere else. And, you know, we feel really strongly of looking for ways where we can teach the skill, obviously keeping safety in mind. So we had a student in particular who has a hard time with peers. And instead of removing them from recess, we had the student kind of like a reverse inclusion recess, right? So we had the student go out to the playground, to a separate playground, and slowly bring students in one by one to play with them. Again, to work on those skills in a more controlled situation and teach the skills needed instead of resorting to these challenging behaviors. And we found such great success. The student was able to transition, you know, back to recess with the rest of their peers in a pretty quick manner, as opposed to just removing them and not teaching anything. And so I can see how, you know, reverse inclusion in lots of different areas can be really beneficial when you're trying to work on, you know, skill building for the student.
I love the recess example. That's such a nice way to use reverse inclusion that's meaningful, because yes, typical recess is chaos. So a few like logistical questions on reverse inclusion that I've gotten asked that I'd love to hear your input on. So I like how you noted that you get parent consent before kind of starting this process. I get asked that a lot. What other type of training or discussion do you do with those gen ed peers before you start this process?
So we definitely talk with them about the behaviors they may see. So anything that might look a little different than something they're used to, and what staff might be doing to manage a situation. So I think that challenging behavior could be the most alarming for students coming into the classroom, depending on the level, and knowing that, you know, everyone's okay, this is how we're going to handle it, this is what you might see, is helpful to make them feel comfortable if a situation does arise where we might see more unpredictable behavior. As Megan said before, to AAC devices. So the training that our speech therapist does, you know, making sure that students know how to communicate with an AAC user, how they can wait, how they can, you know, ask for, present forced choices, anything like that, that we think will help promote the student's engagement during that activity. We also like to be, and this is, you know, Megan can speak more to this, pick specific activities, right? So we definitely are not picking the hardest, most challenging activity for our students to complete during that. So starting by our students pairing with the peers, building up to a structured activity where we know our students can be successful and have demonstrated that success, so that the only new variable is new peers in the classroom and not, you know, a complete new expectation for the entire group.
Yeah, I'd love to hear more about what types of activities you think are a good fit for these reverse inclusion sessions.
Yeah. So like Jen said, in the beginning, we typically start with, you know, kind of just like pairing, maybe just doing some simple play or really simple board games. A lot of like cause and effect board games we find to be the most successful, right? So like pop the pig or feed the kitty or like don't wake granny, right? So it doesn't really require much skill in terms of knowing how to play the game, but more in like turn taking, right? Again, making our students be more successful. successful and more independent, you know, then they're more confident to participate. So we kind of start there. And then we've done activities that are really structured because, again, our students often thrive on that structure. So things we've done are like science experiments where we put the, you know, instructions, like a visual schedule of the instructions up on the smart board so all of the students can see, and have them, you know, kind of do it one at, you know, do it one step at a time. We've done craft projects, we've made slime. And again, in all of these situations, we like to put the directions up on a smart board or put, you know, the visuals in front of everyone, so that, again, our students can participate and also kind of know what is going to be coming next. Other things we've done is we've played one of their favorite games is the I have who has game. So like depending on the season, right? So maybe for Halloween, you can get these cards often. I find them all over Teachers Pay Teachers. You know, it's like I have the ghost, who has the witch? And then you have to look at your card and it's I have the witch, who has the skeleton, things like that. And we'll often pair the students up, right? So that the peer is also helping, you know, the learner participate. And they really like that game. And it's a pretty, you know, simple game, but it's structured and everyone can participate no matter their level. And so that one has been really successful. And we even just work on like a social question before. So maybe we're making slime that day, but in the beginning I'll say, okay, today I want everybody to focus on, you know, what is your favorite sport to play? And I want you to talk to your buddy. And then by the end of the session, I'm going to come back around and ask everyone, you know, what did your buddy say? And vice versa. And really have them practice engaging because, you know, at first we do have, you know, some of the students who come in who are a little nervous to ask questions or, you know, to engage with the student. And so giving them something very specific, right, almost a script for all of them has been really helpful. And then we'll go back around at the end of the session and say, okay, you know, you tell me, what did you learn about your partner today or about your buddy today? And I think they like that, especially if they're, you know, also shy or nervous and not really sure how they can approach the situation. And then for us, we'll always make sure that the student's able to answer, whether it's verbally or with some sort of, you know, picture or with their AAC device. We'll make sure that, you know, the question is asking is something we know they'll be able to respond to. Again, just trying to make the experiences as positive as possible in a kind of controlled environment.
Oh, I love all those ideas. And I love those I have who has games as well. So what advice and instruction do you give to staff during these activities? Like, what is the teacher and the paraprofessional's role when students are in the classroom?
Yeah. So typically as the teacher, you know, I typically am the one who's leading the session, right? So telling everyone this is what we're doing, you know, making sure everybody has the materials that are needed, and monitoring, going around and monitoring what's happening. And typically the paras, the instructions they are giving, again, are to help facilitate those social interactions, right? So for both sides, because again, sometimes the peer buddies also need a little bit of assistance responding or don't know really how to ask the question, or, you know, won't give that wait time, right? So we'll have the paras say, okay, you asked the question, now wait for them to respond, right? So just really trying to help facilitate all of those things. And then, of course, managing the behavior in the meantime, right? So making sure that they're still following a behavior plan, they're still getting their reinforcement or breaks or anything that's needed to keep the student's schedule as consistent as possible, you know, again, to ensure success. And so that's typically what our paras do, you know, during the sessions. And then again, the teacher's kind of overseeing the project and kind of giving the instructions.
Awesome. Okay. So last question, I could talk about like reverse conclusion all day because I love it. But so for anyone listening that's like, okay, I want to try this, what's your advice on getting this started?
So I would definitely say talk to your administration. I think share with them your goals, explain why it's so important for your students to have these opportunities and get their buy-in. Ask them how they think you should approach it. I think that's something we definitely did, is like, how can we reach the teachers? So we schedule specific times in the beginning of the year to meet with teachers where our students are aligned, and it just sets the year up for success. But that's not to say you can't do it mid-year or at the end of the year. I think it's just making sure that you're connecting with the teachers in a way that everyone is going to be receptive to. So catching them, you know, during their lunchtime probably isn't great. So seeing if, you know, the administration can carve out a time during a PD day or during a staff meeting to talk with the teachers where they're available and willing to, you know, listen to what you have to say. And then I think from there, it's about working with the teachers. And I think, you know, most of the time we're pleasantly surprised by how open and how excited the teachers are for these opportunities, especially when we see that it's, you know, coming into our classroom. I think that some of the stress with inclusion is the teacher maybe not feeling confident in having a new student in their classroom who maybe they're not familiar with their abilities, who comes with staff or a behavior plan. And so this kind of alleviates that and is a good step in the direction to have, you know, their students go to the environment. And then down the road, if our students are able to transition in, they already have a buddy in the class or two or three, depending on the year and how many buddies we have. And then it just, you know, builds that confidence for the teacher as well that, you know, this is going to be successful. It won't disrupt instruction. You know, everything's going to be okay.
Love that. Yeah. It's a great first step. Talk to your administration.
It's always a good first step.
Yes. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, you guys. Where can people go to learn more from you?
Yeah, thank you so much for having us. And of course, we also could talk about reverse inclusion forever. But we have our own company where we do professional development and also parent trainings. We've also done pop-ups of social skills groups and things like that. So the name of our company is Moms Managing Behavior. We're both moms and we love to manage behavior, both at home and at school. We are on Instagram or Facebook at Moms Managing Behavior. And we're always posting ideas there of different strategies and resources that you can go to our Teachers Pay Teachers, you know, for visuals and trainings and slides and things like that.
Great. I will link your profile in the show notes. Thanks so much for joining today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to the Autism Helper podcast. If you liked what you heard and want to hear more, hit subscribe. It would mean a lot to me if you left some feedback. Whether I'm working one-on-one with a student, doing a podcast like this one, or presenting for a PD, my goal is always to provide as much value as I can. So your feedback really helps me make sure I'm doing just that. If you have other topics you'd like me to cover, leave in the feedback or message me on social media. You can follow me at The Autism Helper on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Pinterest, or visit my website, theautismhelper.com. Thanks again for listening. Having the right resources for your classroom is essential to making sure your classroom is running smoothly. At the Autism Helper Shop, we have all of the resources you need to make sure you have the behavior, communication, and curriculum supports for your students. Within our shop, we have adapted books, task cards, resources aligned to the VBMAP and the ABLES, behavior plan flowcharts, data sheets, curriculum, everything you need, whether you are an early childhood teacher or a high school teacher, we have all of the resources that will meet those students' needs. So head over to shop.theautismhelper.com to check out all of our resources.